Today's daf, the Masechet Nedarim, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Mem Gimel, and we're holding at the Halakha Mishnah at the bottom of Mem Beit Amud Beit. So we're continuing on with the theme of our perek, the concepts of what is included in the neder, the issue of Vitur Asurbi with Isurei Hana'ah, which we started with. We're going to, according to some Rishonim, we even get back to that theme. And here the question is, we talked about all types of things that you're allowed to do, and you're allowed to share with someone that's Asur B'Hana'ah, including taking off Truma, feeding his kids, and being Mavriach Ari, according to Hanan, and so on and so forth. Now the question is, can you lend him money? Or can you lend him things that are not worth money, in terms of the Schirut, but that he's going to be Nene from you? So, Hamudarana Amechaviru, this Mishnah says that in the event that you're Mudarana, says something very strange. You can neither lend him or borrow from him. So I was going to ask, I mean, I understand. If he is usher to be Nena from you, this, by the way, there are two Girsaot of the Gemara, but it's not really important whether we're talking about you made him usher and you made yourself usher on him. So, obviously, it changes what we're talking about, lending being the obvious thing, or borrowing being the obvious thing, being usher. But in any event, if the person who is usher is going to be nene from you because he got a loan from you, that I understand. But, like, what hana does he have in lending you money? That I don't understand. And again, as I said, whatever your girsa is, the Ran's girsa and the Gemara is the opposite of our girsa. But it doesn't really matter. The point is, the person who is usher, no matter who made the neder over here, the person who is usher should be the only one who is not allowed to get the benefit of the loan. And what in the world does he get by lending money to somebody else or lending an item to somebody else? So that the Gemara will ask. Why does it say, lo yashilenu velo yishal mimenu, lo yalvenu velo yilve mimenu? And then it says something else that's strange, which is a contradiction of what we had before. It says, "V'lo yimkor lo, v'lo yikach mimenu." You can neither sell nor buy from that person. I remember we had the Gemara before that spoke about somebody who asserted himself on anybody. And we made a distinction between, if we're talking about al hapanim, a mecher al ape that we called it, or something that was a zvina harifa, which people can easily spend a lot of money for because you can easily sell it because everybody wants it. And we were mechalik. That in one case, it would be hana to the seller. In the other case, it would be hana to the buyer. And over here, it says you cannot sell and you cannot buy. We have to understand that as well. It doesn't seem to be fully consistent with all of the cases that we had before. So immediately, the Gemara asks, of course, I understand why lo yalvenu. You can't actually lend him money because you're being mahana him. Now, the Ran's gears are just the opposite. I understand why you can't borrow from him, but there it's talking about that the person who answered himself can't borrow. So, as I said, it doesn't really matter what your gears is. The point is clear. The one who is osir bahana'a, I understand why he cannot accept a loan. The one who's not allowed to be mahana the other person, I can understand why he can't lend him. So whatever your girsa is, depends who the madir was, of course, and who the mudar was. So bishlam, we'll take the girsa that we have, because you just have to invert the concepts if you want to read the Ran's girsa. So bishlam lo yalvenu, I understand you cannot lend a person that you said is osur b'hana'a from you. And the kamahani like, you're giving him hana by lending him money. But why can't you borrow from him? Lo yalveh heimeno? What kind of hana are you giving him by borrowing money? And I also can, at least I can explain somehow or other the two first things. I could say, look, you could say lo yalveh heimeno. I can understand a little bit why it would say that you cannot borrow money. And lo yikach hemenu, you can't buy from him. Why? Because there are ways to at least understand that, because there he is getting some kind of hana. So I could say that we're talking about over here, let's say, where, remember we had the idea that if you lend him, these are talking about types of matbeot that are not such good matbeot, and then, so if he borrows from you matbeot gruot, and then he would repay with better matbeot, better yotzot, so then that would be giving you a hana'a. And therefore, okay, I can explain that away. And I can also talking about that if we have where you have something that is a hana'a in a sale to the mocher, so it's something that is sort of a middle grade kind of thing. He's happy to get a buyer. He could get other buyers, but still it's hana'a for him to get a buyer. Okay, so I could explain the Mishnah as that case. But I can't imagine what would the advantage be in borrowing his lawnmower. That I don't understand. Well, I mean, he's not going to be able to pay you back a better lawnmower. So what would be the explanation for that? Even if you stretch your mind, I just don't get what case I could even say we're worried about such a case. What's the case? Lo yish alimenu? I mean, what hana does a person get from lending something to somebody, which is just going to be a hassle for him, a possible loss for him? He's using up the thing. I mean, nobody enjoys lending. I mean, he'll do it, but certainly not, wow, thank you very much for borrowing from me. Omer Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Hanina. Well, could be talking about a case where they were neider hana'a, each one from the other, which is weird. Because, I mean, so then what in the world is the Mishnah teaching you? So the Ran understands, this is what I mentioned to you before, the Ran understands that what it would be teaching you is that vitur would be aser. Because when it says you can't borrow, it could be talking about anything, right? So you can't borrow even, you know, a hair clip. I mean, something that people don't charge for and that they're not makbid on, and that would just be vitur. Nobody cares if you take a hairpin. Nonetheless, according to Rebbe, so it would be a continuation of our opening Mishnah. According to Rebbe Eliezer, vitur is aser. That would be the Chiddush. And Abaye says, that's very far-fetched. Makes much more sense to say that gizera lush'ol mishum lahash'il. And this is because, since people do not really view these things as necessarily included in an Isra'na'a, because they're just types of normal intercourse, and therefore, why would I? It doesn't cross my mind. So if I see somebody who's borrowing money, so I mean, that type of transaction is okay. So it's afkamina, you know, lend money, borrow money. Therefore, in this case, we're just gozer one for the other. So even though we'll see later on that there's always a difference in things that are actual hana'a, where we don't make such a gezera, where we'll say the mutter is usher, but the mother is mutter, and so on, as the Ran points out, things that everybody understands is a real hana'a. So obviously, I'm not going to make a gezera to take the hana'a versus the giving of the hana'a. Everybody knows who's usher and who in terms of the netter. But the type of things that might not be recognized as being covered by a netter, we're afraid it's a slippery slope. And once you get involved in that type of transaction, then you may not realize that it's different. So we make a gezeira. That's what Abaye is saying. Which brings us at last to the grand moment of Sir Richard. Uh-oh, because Doc's already on screen here, Sir Richard. And, you know.
Yeah, I'm here.
I don't know. Okay, move fast, buddy.
Another drink, Rebbe. Another drink.
Now, let's talk about these kinds of lending and borrowing. Let's imagine a case. A guy says, lend me your cow. It's like, lend me your tractor. So he wants to be able to take care of his field and plow it. And the guy says, I'm sorry, my cow is busy. Enap nuya. So it's been used basically right now. It's in use in my own field. And this guy says, what a bunch of bull. I was asking a cow. I wasn't expecting bull. I know for a fact that that's not the case. And he's very angry. So he says, okay, that does it. I am never going to use that cow in my field. So konem sodi shani chorish bala olam. I won't use your cow if this is the kind of guy you are. So now the question is, can somebody else use the cow in his field, or is it just that the cow is usur to be used for his field? So this is an interesting addition to the understanding, the analysis of what a person means to include in the neder, which we saw as a fundamental topic in the perek, and it shows us that that too is a contextual question. So now the issue is like this. If this guy who got angry usually does the plowing on his own, in his own field. So then when he says, be damned if I'll ever use your cow again. So then it would only be usur on him. In other words, because he's the guy that will do the work himself. Now, if somebody else is hired to do his field, and that somebody else wants to use the cow, that's fine. It's not like that he's thinking that your cow doesn't deserve to do the work in my field. He's talking about himself. I wouldn't use a cow from a guy that is such a stingy person, right? So it would depend. So ima yadar kolach rosh, if he himself would usually do the plowing all on his own, so then hu asur v'chol adam mutarim? Anybody else would be okay. Because we assume naturally that that's what he was really talking about. But im ein dar kolach rosh, if he always would do it through somebody else, he would hire somebody. So that must be what he meant when he said, be damned if I'll use your cow. He didn't mean personally. He meant, your cow doesn't deserve to be in my field to plow it. Okay, so then it would be asur anybody. So then who? V'chol adam asurim. So we see here an extension of the concept of contextual, to much broader kind of context, and it too is sufficient to define for us absolutely the assumption of what's included in the neder. Now, so getting back to the question of the interrelationship of the madir and the mudar, because that's what we're getting closer and closer to here. First, we have these general issues. What is included as hana'ah? What is included in terms of the intent? Now we get to the question of the relationship. Now, the mudar hana'ah, I mean, generally speaking, so what we mean over there is the neder certainly is an indication that this person does not want the other individual in the end to be benefiting directly from him under any circumstances. Now, what happens if the guy is sick? If you are sick, it depends on who made the neder. So we discussed, is that meant to be included? But how about issues where you were the one that asserted that person, and therefore we said, if you were the one who asserted the rofe, so then we assume that you didn't mean to asser the doctor to come and to save your life, fine. But what if the doctor was the one who made the neder? He don't give a hang about your life, and therefore it ought to be included. Fine, then we made the distinction if it's a mitzvah, if there's no other doctor, and so on and so forth. Now, under normal circumstances, if I am aser you from getting anof from me, now I'm not allowed to provide that anof for you. Now, there could be circumstances in which I really feel stuck, and I would like to change it, but we don't have an umdana that this was included in your neder up front, where you were really angry at the guy, didn't want to give him hana in any way, and you included even extreme circumstances. I don't give a hang if the guy doesn't have what to eat. It's not my problem. Okay. Here what happened is that really turned out to be the case. Guy has nothing to eat. So now, of course, you start feeling a little bit bad for the guy. Okay. It's not an umdana that you would have said, well, of course, I would never have asked him if the poor man doesn't have what to eat. So now we're stuck. Now we have to define how directly do we mean when you say you won't be mahana somebody. Because we've already seen the concept of ancillary hana'at, In other words, I'm busy doing something that bothers me. So I want to take care of his kids. I don't like it when I see kids not having what to eat. Okay, so we said over there, look, you're going ahead, you're doing your mitzvah. She's saying, but this other guy's going to be saved from the bezdin that's going to insist that he... Fine, I don't care, let him be saved. That's not my business. So ancillary hana'ot we spoke about. But what about where... We're not talking about ancillary hana'ot. We're talking about the fact that he is the focus of the hana'ah. So when we're talking about an isra hana'ah, how direct does it have to be in order to be included under the hana'ot that were asurot? So this expands our concerns. We're not talking about what type of hana'ah. We're not talking about what is considered to be hana'ah. We're talking about how directly a neder asers hana'ah. Now look, under the best circumstances, assuming that we're not under pressure. So obviously, we would aser, at least bin Rabbanan, any type of hana'ah that is coming in any way directly because you want to give that guy hana'ah, right? But how about where we're under dire circumstances? Now that could be that we could be makel to actually strip the issue down. Moshe Andel, please mute. Mute yourself, Marshale. Thank you. So the question is like this. Somebody's mutar ana michaviro, and he's not allowed to give him any ana. And the guy does not have anything to eat. He lost all of his money. You see that he can't even pay his makolet bill. What are you going to do for the guy? So what you could do is you could go to your makolet, where the guy knows you. You have a charge account. And you say to the guy, look, Mr. So-and-so is in dire straits. I can't help him out. He's mutar hana'ah mimeni. I really don't know what to do for the poor guy, but it's breaking my heart to see him starving like this. So then, in yodea mana ma'ase. So then, the storekeeper, your makolet man, he could give him food, and he could charge your account. And ba venoto mize. Now that doesn't mean that when he comes and charges your account, that he could insist on charging your account, right? In other words, it's sort of understood that since you know I do have an account, you know that I pay my bills, you know that I'm the kind of guy that doesn't just say things like this and leave it to other people to handle. But if I insisted, well, I never said I would pay, you would not be able to sue me. Because you can't say, for a hint, you can't say on a hint that I committed myself. So therefore, what we're relying on over here is the chenvani essentially doing something on his own, because he's acting on the hint. And he's assuming he's going to get paid. So I encouraged him to act on the hint. But since legally he's not doing my shlichut, there is no direct hana'ah coming from me to the guy that's hungry. It's coming from the chenvani, from the balam akolet. And when it says you go to someone, a chenvani that you have an account with, obviously it doesn't mean only that. It means even that. So even where it could be construed as a shlichut, people say, how can you do that? You're not allowed to give him hana'ah. We still are matrit because of the dire circumstances. And it's not a direct hana'ah from you. It's viewed as a hana'ah from the chenvani, in which case, when you're paying the chenvani back, if you elect to do so, so then that would be mafriya chari, so to speak. It would be the same type of thing in which you're encouraging somebody else to do the guy something nice. Okay, now this, I understand, is in a case where the guy is starving. Okay, I mean, how about in a case where he desperately needs something, but he can manage without it, he's managed until now. All right, so this guy, he needs to fix his home, or he needs to build himself a home. His fence fell down and he needs to put up a fence, even in cases like that? Yes. So this Mishnah is telling us that lozu avzu, not only in a case in which he's hungry, but even in a case where you feel bad for him because of his need. So it's not in extremis, but it is in need. So haya beito livnot, sadeo liktzor. What about then? You can do the same thing. You can go to people that work for you, and they've done work for you in the past. They know that you're a good guy, And you say to them the same thing. You say, you know, Mr. So-and-so, wish I could help him. He's in bad shape. He really needs people to fix his fence. I don't know what to do because he's usher banami many. Any odema esa. So then they can assume, even though they wouldn't be able to sue him, they can do the work, and then they can ask him to pay. They can't force him to pay, but they can ask him to pay. And when he pays, it's not considered to be a direct hana'ah. It's considered to be a lovely gift from the workers to this individual. So even that is considered to be not a direct hana'ah that would be usur. What you should do is you should encourage Gavi, not or Akiva. I mean, people that have liquids. There we go.
Rebbe, in the case of the debt collector, well, we said it was putting out fires. I think it was for his wife. So in that situation, we allowed it because it was just called putting out a fire. Like it, you can pay somebody
it's called chasing away lions, actually.
You can pay the debt collector so that he goes away.
Chasing away lions.
Chasing away lions, correct?
Yes. Remember, Akiva always confuses that with lions. But if the lions are after, so, yes.
In the case where he's got nothing to eat, why is that not called, chasing away lions? There's a problem. The guy needs food. I'm not giving him money. No, I'm just
the chasing away lions is after he's incurred the debt that they shouldn't come after him. Here, I'm getting him the food. So it's very different. The guy is going to give him food because of me. And it's because of I'm hinting around. And in the end, he knows he's going to get paid. So it's only the fact that it's not a legal transaction that makes it not a shlichut. Let's say I would make it a real shlichut. So then for sure it would be usur, right? If I would tell the guy, you give him food and I'll pay you, that would be usur, 100%. Because then he's just acting on your behalf. When you usur somebody about no, it doesn't mean you're not going to hand it with your own hand. You can't get it to him either. So the chiddush is that this is not considered to be you getting it to him if there's some dire need. Okay. So now, what if you don't have this opportunity? You're basically on the road. There's no one around. The guy is hungry. You're lost in the desert. You're the guy that's got the food. He doesn't have any food. What happens then? So now you can't go to your makolet because actually, wildernesses are known for not having your makolet nearby. So what do you do? Well, if there's other people, generally people traveled in caravans, so if there's other people, you could give the food to another person as a gift and say, oh, you know, I have a little bit of extra food. How about taking this as a gift? You know, because I'd like anyone who doesn't have food, I'd like them to be able to have food. And, okay, so then that person could go ahead and give it to the other person. So, because he's not usher, so halamutrbo. And the other person that's usher bana would then be allowed to take the food from that person. But how about if it's only you and a he? Now, what happens then? Aha. So then, in any mahim acher, what you could do is, now this is really a much bigger kula. Because this, there's no one else in between. You could take it, put it on top of a fence somewhere, or a stone somewhere, and you're mafkirit. V'omer hareinim mufkarim l'chol mi shiyachpotz. There's nobody else around, you know, okay. But you're being mafkir this. I hereby proclaim these as hefker. They're not mine anymore. And then that guy can go and take it and eat it. Wow. Okay, so that is really just the legality of it. It isn't mine, and I only usher the guy in something that is mine. Now that, of course, involves the issue, a lot of all types of issues, such as, do you need other people there? Is it mi'ikar adin that hefker is not going to be chal if you don't have people that are there that are able to take it from you? Do you need two witnesses? Does it have to be b'fnei shlosha? All of the questions that were normally makpid in terms of hefker, and the fundamental question of hefker. Can something leave your rishus just because you said anybody who wants to can take it from my rishus? is hefker a change in ownership, or is hefker just permission for someone to be kena it, and then it changes ownership? But you don't lose your ownership just because you gave that permission. Oh, now that's a big question. The Mishnah, according to the Tanakhama, seems to be saying that the moment that you said it's hefker, that at that point it isn't really yours, even though there was no change. Now remember, normally we require kinyanim to effectuate change. It was no kinyan. There was only a da'at to be maknad. There was no one to be kena. So how does hefker work? And indeed,
well, like the maisa, I put it on the stone. Isn't that maisa? I didn't just say it.
True, but where's the kinyan? And so Rabbi Yossi indeed answers it, and we'll see what the issue is in the Gemara. But what he seems to be saying is, if there's someone there in the caravan, yes. But if there's no one to actually take it from you, then no. So in other words, he's only arguing on the last piece. We'll see, not everybody agrees. He's only arguing on the last piece, but that's the pashas of the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, so how do you explain Rabbi Yossi? Rabbi Yossi says, look, hefker is no different than giving a gift. That's what you're doing. You're just saying whoever wants this gift can have this gift, but it's still considered to be the equivalent of a gift. Now, if I give you a gift, it doesn't become yours because I say I'm making this a gift to you. It only becomes yours when you receive the gift. If I say to you, I'm making this as a gift to you, and then I change my mind, go do me something. You weren't kena it when I said I'm making this a gift to you. So the same thing is true over here. Just like a matana, ad atyam eshut noten l'eshut mekabel, it certainly doesn't become yours until such time as you take it. There needs to be a kinyan. So how could hefker be different? Af hefker, ad atyam l'eshut zocher. I can't take it out of my reshus unless someone picks it up and removes it from my reshus. But up until the time that that happens, I could always change my mind and say, you know what? It's not hefker. I wouldn't have to go and be zocher to it. I just would change my mind about being hefker, because saying it's hefker, according to me, says Rabbi Yossi, would just be a statement of intent, but not anything else. Fine. Now, if that's the case, then we've got a problem from a bright. Because Masi Rabbi Abba, we have a brighter that says, and this is the brighter on our Mishnah, which continues from the end of our Mishnah. The end of our Mishnah is Hala Notel V'Ochel, and Rabbi Yossi says it's Aser, and here's the key to the question. The brighter adds something that our Mishnah never spoke about, namely, that Rabbi Yossi says, when do I say that it's Aser? Rabbi Yossi Oser, when? If the Neder came first before it was Hefker. So then, if the Neder came first, my being Mafkirit would still be Aser. But in the other case, if first I'm Mafkirit and then I make a Neder, then it's Mutter. Oh, now wait a minute. Now that seems to involve the other issue. The issue that we spoke about yesterday. Can somebody Aser something and then it remains Aser even in Shvius, which is like a Hefker, when it leaves your Rishus? So what he's saying is very much like the Mishnah we had before, the Machlokas, where we understood the Machlokas Rav and Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, about was the Neder made before Shvius, was the Neder made during Shvius, or is the coming of Shvius what makes the difference? That's what it seems to be involved in, because otherwise, what's the difference? If you're telling me that the logic in Rabbi Yossi is that Hefker requires somebody to take it, what's the difference? It's still mine. So what's the difference if I make the Neder after I made it Hefker and nobody took it, in which case it's mine? Or I made the Neder before I made it Hefker, when it's mine. Same exact thing. And therefore, if you're claiming that the entire logic of Rabbi Yossi is predicated on this idea of Hefker being similar to a statement of intent of giving a gift, And that would mean that it's similar to the matana. Who cares when you made the neder? Mali nidro kodem lefkero. Mali efkero kodem lenidro. This seems to be an ironclad proof that the issue in Rabbi Yossi is not an argument about the nature of hefker. It's simply a question that we had before about, is the neder chal even after it leaves your rishus? So then it might be very dependent in the language. Was it my things? Was it these things? All the issues that we raised earlier. Benogeh Shemitah. Answers the Gemara. And actually, Rebaba, who asked the Kasha, answered this on his own. And he realized this is not such a desperate question. Humotiv lavu mefarekla. He asked the question. And then he realized that's not such a good question. Because maybe what Rabbi Yossi means is that kol hanoder ein dato mamash hefker. Maybe, theoretically, if he had wanted to assert, of course he could have. He could have said, look, I changed my mind. It's not hefker anymore. Ha ha. And now I'm assering it. Fine. But he didn't say that. So the question is, what's his intent? So there we're assuming that a person who already said the words, I'm after this, then when he assers you, Bahana'a, he's not thinking of assering you on something that he no longer views as being important to him. That's the point. It's not that technically he could not. Technically he could have. It's just a question of the da'at of the note there. In which case, this would go back to the overall theme of the parak. What is your da'at in the neder? That's all. Okay. So therefore, I can't ask this as a question. The question, however, is that true? Do we say that something that already, a person had already given away, at least in his own mind, he does not intend to deal with after he gave it away? Because we have indications that that is not the case. Now, there are two very different girsaot in the following Gemara. Which braita did we ask from? The Ran has one approach, which is different than the girsa that we have, and the Rosh has a completely different approach, which other Rishonim also. Most of the Rishonim have the Rosh's approach, which is our Gemara, but and then let's take the Ran first. So over here, the question would be like this. Masiv Verova, if he gives Miksatan Rishon, the Kulam Lasheni, the extra word in the Ran, Sheni Zachala Hishta'abed Berishon. Now that obviously is got to be talking about a case of Avadim. If you're saying the second Eved has the right to be Mishta'abed with the first Eved. Okay. So this would be talking about a case where a guy has two Avadim. The halacha is that if you give part of what you own, so let's say you say to an Eved, you know what? I want you to get 20% share in my holdings. You gave him nothing because he cannot prove that in giving him that 20% share that he was included in the 20% share. And if he's not included in 20% share, you still own him. And an Eved who was gaining something goes right back to you. So it's a very nice gesture, but oh, it's cruel. It's cruel. So the guy is still an Eved and he ends up getting absolutely nothing. Now, suppose you then go to your second Eved and you say to the second Eved, I'm giving you everything that I have, right? So then the first one wasn't kind of anything. So there's his lokan arishon, because we have no idea that he gave him himself. And the second one is zocha in himself, and he was even zocha in the first one, despite the fact that I had given away the first one. I'd given him already a gift. But he was zocha, the second one was zocha, to be the owner of the first one, because to the second one I gave away everything that I owned. So you see from there that the person who gives away everything has in his mind to give away something that he had already given away because he gave away 20% of his holdings to the first one. So how would the second one have the right to be mishtabed? He could say, well, prove to me that he wasn't included in the first one. So you see that now that I go ahead and give him the rest. So then it means to give even what I thought or had declared that I gave away. Because since the first one wasn't Cana himself, so therefore I can give it away. That's true. But I thought you just said that a person doesn't give away in a netter, doesn't think about things that he already had given away, even though technically they're not really given away. That's not true over here. That's the Ron's Girsa. And the question is very clear. If you're not going to think about things that you've already given away because you were mafka them, even though technically they're still yours, so how come in this case you did? And therefore, we're doiche the answer that we just said that, well, maybe it's because his das isn't. Apparently, that's not true. Okay, that is the Ron. Now, our approach, which doesn't have anything about mishtabet, it has to do with the question of miktzatan rishon dekulan l'sheni, rishon kana v'sheni lo kana. That's our girsa. Now, that obviously is talking about not a case of avadim, but that is a classic situation of a shchiv mira. So a shchiv mira, the halacha is like this. If he gave away everything that he owns, so then he is understood to have assumed that he's going to die. And that means that the entire halacha of this gift is not as a normal gift. It's a gift that as if it contains the condition, in the event that I die, this will all be yours. Because nobody gives away everything that they own if they think that they're going to survive. So it must be that he meant as a tenai. So there becomes the gift of a shchiv mira. But suppose a person does this in stages. So he gives a little bit of his property to Mr. A, and then he goes ahead and he gives other things to Mr. B and other things to Mr. C. Okay, so in those cases, we need to look into, is this all part of a mechalek his nechasim, and he's being mechalek all of his nechasim, so then all of them are understood to have this condition attached. How about in a case where it's not evident that they're interrelated? One day he gives away something to Mr. A in his illness, next day he gives away everything that he has to Mr. B. Did he intend to give Mr. B everything that he has, even including what it is that he'd already given to Mr. A? Or did he intend to allow Mr. A, that was a whole different transaction, he's not thinking about that, and he's giving away everything that is left to Mr. B? So in this case, we have the same issue. Does he mean to think about something that was already given away before? This is how the Rosh understands the sugya, as do other Rishonim. So therefore, we say that halacha over here is that in this event, he can only be chozer if he gets well. He can only be chozer when he gave everything away. So now, if it says kana Rishon, so then what that means is that he, when he originally gave it to the Rishon, he did not have in mind to give it to the Sheni. Because if we're considering this to be an ongoing giving out all your nechasim, so then neither of them would have been koneh. Because we said, nobody leaves himself bereft if he thinks he's going to survive. Fine. So if this, that would be the case, then both of them should not be koneh. So over here we consider him to be a nimlach. And therefore, when he said the sheni, he wants to give kulam l'sheni, so then he is a nimlach, and he's going back even on the miktzat that he had given to the original guy. So that means that now I've changed my mind. I want to give everything to the sheni if I can. So when he said miktzatan l'rishon, he did not have in mind to give away this next part. And then he said, I want to give everything away to the second guy. Because if all when he meant, I'm giving away to the second guy only what is left that I haven't given to the first guy, so then that would mean that in his mind, he is in a process of giving away everything that he owns. And therefore, the first guy also should not have been koneh, because this would be mechalek nechasav. And therefore, It's a matnashchiv mira and the whole thing. So apparently, the second one that he gave to, he had in mind to give away everything now, including what he had given before. He thinks, okay, if I can get that back, I'd like to give that, take that back. Which means that when he had given it to the first one, he didn't really give it to the first one. So that shows us that he's thinking about his previous givings, even though in his mind that was already done. That's how the Rosh understands the question. So it's basically the same issue. We want to know whether psychologically something that a person is already disposed of in his terms, even though it may not be a legal disposition, but he feels that, okay, I've dealt with that piece, now let me deal with the next piece, is not true. When he comes to deal with the next piece, he has in mind whatever it is that might still be left of the original thing that hasn't been chal. So whether we're talking about an eved, or whether we're talking about a question of nashkiv mira, the point is that it is clear that Reb Abba is wrong, and that people do think back, even though they were mafkir something. If it's still in my hand to get it, I would like to get it. So then in that case, your explanation of the Mishnah and the Braita that says it's an afkamino, whether the netter was first made or the hefker was first made, that's not the answer. In which case, we now have to re-examine Rabbi Yossi. So what, in fact, is the explanation of Rabbi Yossi? Because the way Rabbi Yochanan explained Rabbi Yossi doesn't make any sense, that there would be an afkamina in which order he made it, whether he did the hefka first or last. Okay, therefore, Rava says that your understanding of Rabbi Yossi is wrong. There's a completely different issue over here. And you will recall the famous story of the guy in Beit Choron, but we've discussed this before. A guy assered, he was in a fight with his father. He assered his father Bahana'a. Now, again, the question is very similar to the question in our Mishnah. The question is, what happens when he's in dire straits? Namely, in this case, what's dire straits? He's making a wedding. So he wants to be able to invite his father to the wedding. And because otherwise it's embarrassing to him and so on. Now, we're not going to say that the guy initially never intended to assur his father. He did assur his father. That's not the point. So once again, the question is, what do you do when you're under pressure? Now, I don't care whether the pressure is emotional pressure, social pressure. Well, what do? Is there a way around it? So the story over there in Beit Choron is the guy went over to a friend of his and he says, listen, do me a favor. I want you to be the owner of the chasna hall that I rented and the whole suda. It's all yours. So the guy says, oh, really? Then it should be hegdish. So the other guy says, what are you crazy? I didn't give it to you to make it hegdish. I gave it to you so that my father could eat there. Oh, says the other guy. No, I'll tell you why it is you gave it to me. You gave it to me because you don't want to be the one who goes to hell and violating the neder. You want me to be the one who goes to hell, right? And then you'll say, well, I mean, I didn't mean that. Yeah, right. Thank you very much. So in other words, this Beit Choron is an indication of this is not what is really meant. So therefore, when we say over here, it's the real reason of Rabbi Yossi. The real reason of Rabbi Yossi is not that when you say something is hefker, that it doesn't become hefker. It is hefker. But the point over here is that if you went ahead and you had made it hefker and there was no neder, fine, so then I'm not going to assur it. But if you went ahead and made it hefker after the neder, do you really mean it's hefker? If somebody else would come along, that would be the equivalent of giving it to Hegdash? And you'd start shouting, hey, I never made that hefker for you. I only made an hefker for this guy to be able to. So then it's a fake out. So in other words, Rabbi Yossi is concerned that this sure as heck looks like a fake out. And we don't believe you really made it hefker. And therefore, it would open up the door to all of these kind of tricks in which somebody that's usher banot from you, you trick us into, okay, well, technically speaking, he's not being nana, but you didn't really mean anything. That's why Rabbi Yossi assers it. And that, of course, is a completely different issue.